You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Here District. Marcus Johnson here. I'm the captain of this vessel on this fantastic voyage. Chris Johnson is my... What are you, my first mate?
What were you going to call me? Chris who?
My oldest son.
How do you forget my last name, bro?
Chris Johnson, Chris Middleton.
Obviously.
K.H. Carr. And then we also have a guest that we are so privileged to have, as we are with a lot of our guests. But this guy here is a former NBA front office insider. He was with the Brooklyn Nets for 20 years in their front office. But right now, he's working with ESPN. He's worked for Yahoo, worked with everybody. He's an apron expert, Bobby Marks, man. Welcome to Here District.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No doubt.
Well, now, so back to you. It's funny because one time I think I sent you a text and I spelt your name with an H.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
K-H-R-I. But I told him,
it was a low point.
He's like, Dad, there's no H in my name.
It was low point of my life.
It's like, look, man, I'm so used to spelling Chris Middleton.
I think that's the only one, Chris, that I've seen with an H.
He's the only one I've seen, too. But golly, this guy got it wrong. Was it autocorrect? I hope it was autocorrect, bro.
Oh, man, look.
Come on, dog.
I've been spelling Chris Middleton's name but since talking yeah. Chris Middleton. Seeing Chris Middleton, so it just when you get to be my age, it just all runs together.
It's all good, MJ.
But Bobby, man, we thank you so much for being here with us, and just give us a little bit of your basketball background. I mean, were you a player in high school, college?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Marist, and what? Just give us a little taste of what your basketball background is about.
My basketball background was I was a football player in college.
Okay,
all right, that's what I was. That's a good start.
When my grades were so bad at Marist College up in Poughkeepsie, New York, I had to kind of figure out a way to graduate college. Mm-hmm, and I wound up getting an internship with the Nets under Willis Reed.
Oh, nice.
So that was Willis was basically my basketball Bible.
Wow.
And how I learned.
So you worked closely with Willis?
I was his assistant. Wow. when I first started with the Nets here. And that's how basically Willis would lock me in a room. And back then when you're doing video work, it was tape to tape.
Okay.
We didn't have Synergy or anything. Basically had two VCRs and you're doing tape to tape. And Butch Beard was our head coach. And the beauty in 95 was the departments now have expanded. Like you got you look behind the bench.
Oh, yeah.
You got
42 coaches.
Back then at the Nets, we had 10 people.
Yeah.
We had a secretary, Willis, Butch Beard. We had a couple coaches, and then we had a bunch of scouts and myself. So you get to learn everything.
Yeah.
And that's how I learned, really, take the football cap off and kind of the intricacies of basketball here.
Yeah.
And then certainly working for Willis, and then I worked for John Calipari for 3 years, and Byron Scott for a few years, and Rod Thorne from a GM perspective, Billy King. I mean, the list of coaches that we had, and Lawrence Frank, who's at the Clippers.
Oh, yeah.
We had a lot of Avery Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd go Lionel Hollins. I mean, the list of coaches, you just kind of, and then you just learn.
Yeah.
You just kind of, you sit in the back room, in the back, and you just kind of don't ask questions. You just kind of pick up things, and you go from there.
So with a small staff, 10 people, I take it that you probably had to do a lot of different jobs, or were you like locked into?
Well, here's some of the jobs that I did. I used to go to Newark Airport and warm up the players' cars when they landed.
Wait, what do you mean warm up?
You were that guy.
What do you mean warm up?
That's what they do. We get in late. There's a crew of guys out there to get the cars started.
I was that guy.
Okay.
I would go there to the FBO, which was, I think, was Signature at Newark Airport. Before they left, I'd have a hat, and they'd put their keys in the hat. And they would. Our trainer would call me at when they were leaving from Chicago. He'd go, hey, we're going to land at 1 o'clock.
Uh-huh,
and I would leave my house. So I was living at home, and they pay me everyone would tip me, and I'd go warm up the cars. And one night, we had Rick Mahorn on our team.
Big Rick.
This was 96, 95, 96, and I locked Rick's car's keys in his car.
I know he appreciated that at 1 o'clock in the morning.
And he said to me, okay, just make sure that it's at the facility at 9 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the time I get a locksmith out there, it's like 2, and by that time, Rick had like a quarter of a tank, maybe even less, of gas left. And And I remember driving the car on the turnpike. High, you know, flashers on, you know, but that's, yeah, that was, I mean, when you, back then, it's a lot different than what is now when you're, when there's specialties, right? Yeah, you're a cap guy, your analytics, your strategy, you're all these different things. Back then, you're doing like 25 different things you're learning. And that's, I think that's the beauty of it. Back in the old, we didn't, I always, I have a two boy, a 15 and 18 year old. I go, you know, we didn't have the internet in 95. And they're like, what? And they're like, no, we didn't. When I first started with the Nets, I would take the newspapers from the night games, the New York North Star Ledger, the Bergen Record, the Daily News, the Post. The next morning, I would take a scissor and I would cut out the newspaper clips. And I would make a copy of it and I would make it into a book. And I would hand it out to Willis and Arg. And that's how you read about the news. The next day.
I was there.
That's sick.
I was there. But back to Willis, my Louisiana. See, you notice I don't say Louisiana. I say Louisiana. My Louisiana homeboy went to Grambling. I think he's from Northwest Louisiana, somewhere, a little small town. But Bobby, but my fondest memories of him, not of the game, whatever that was, with the, was that
when he came limping out?
That wasn't even that game. Hit a couple jumpers. He won the MVP award with the Knicks. The following season, he had a syndicated show called The MVP, where he it was a variety show. He'd come on and sing and dance. And
really?
Yes, yes, yes.
Willis, ahead of his time.
But it was like, it would come on like on a Friday night at 12 midnight or something.
Are you serious?
On Channel 13, KCOP. It was my favorite show. I mean, it's Willis Reed. He's on there. He's joking.
How was his personality?
It was outside. It was,
he was a beauty. He was a beauty because Willis would always walk around with a blue Sharpie in his pocket and a stack of pictures for people to sign. And he was a huge hunter. He loved to hunt. And I remember like 2 weeks before the trade deadline, he'd be like, okay, can you take me to the airport? And I'd go pick him up and get his gear and stuff. And he goes, I'm going to be in a tree for about a week. I got there was no cell phone. Just, you know, keep a notebook of anything that needs to be taken care of. And when I get back, we'll deal with it.
Yes, sir. The old days.
What did you learn from him in terms of what helped you in your career as an executive?
I think just like being how much of a people person he was. The first, we had PJ Brown back in the mid 90s. And the first agent I had ever met was Mark Bartlestein, who's still, who's been around forever. And just how Willis dealt with Mark, and PJ wound up going, he signed with the Heat after that year. I think just how to relate to people and how to deal with people and how mild manner, but certainly with a, listen, Derek Coleman walked in there. I mean, the infamous story is Derek walked in there with a blank check and said, just fill in the numbers when the year's out. How many times he's going to be fined. And that didn't bother Willis. He could, Willis, just from his from playing and coaching and dealing with a lot of different things, he was just really kind of even keel to everything.
You have any recollection what that number turned out? Was it more than 20, less than 100?
What were the fines?
Like
they weren't as high.
500
a game. Listen, we had a crew. My first year was Derek, Chris Childs.
Oh, that's my
two-piece Chris.
Two-piece Kobe.
We had Kenny Anderson. We had a group. I mean, we had Yinka Dare. Remember Yinka?
From George Washington.
Of course.
Never had an assist in his career. God bless him. Rest in peace. We had a group of people there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
No, that's great, man. Now, if you heard the intro, I talked about Chris and I being the only... Did I say that?
No, you didn't. Okay. First time.
Yeah, first time I missed out. And that's how excited I am about having Bobby Marks. But during the normal intro, Bobby, I introduced us as the only father and son tandem in NCAA history to win an NCAA championship at the same school. There's been others that have won, as you're aware of. We won it at the same school. Me in 1975, Chris, 1995. Yeah. The star of that team is someone else that you are familiar with. Ed O'Bannon, College Player of the Year, 1995. Ed O'Bannon, what was he, eighth pick, ninth, tenth, somewhere in there?
I think he was the eighth pick. He was my first draft pick and with the Nets. Back then, we didn't have practice facilities.
Yeah.
So not like they are now, right? The Taj Mahal, right? Practice. We used to practice at, I don't know if you ever heard the story, APA Trucking. It was a trucking facility. So in New Jersey, because of the Turnpike, you see the Sopranos, the Turnpike.
For sure.
There was a trucking facility in North Bergen that we rented space from. There was a gym in there. And I remember Ed's old workout was in this trucking facility. Like literally, there was guys like you know the night before had truck. Parked their truck and we're like working out in the gym. Yeah. And he,
Paulie and Pussy and yeah.
He came in. He worked out with Sherelle Ford, who was at Illinois Chicago.
Oh, yeah, big guard. And one of the three amigos.
And we thought Ed was going to go like. I mean, we were
earlier.
A lot earlier, and certainly it was. I mean, we were talking off air, like you know, there's some health stuff with his knee. But that was the you know, that was our first draft pick. We thought we were like, man, we had a 6'8" wing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in good shape for a long time.
Yeah.
So. Sherelle Ford, it was the three amigos. It was Donnie Boy, Sherelle Ford, and Michael Finley.
Finley. Went to the Chicago.
They went to the same high school.
Yeah.
Where? Chicago.
Proviso East.
Okay. Just basketball knowledge.
No. When you said Sherelle, because I was working with the Sonics. When Sherelle, we drafted Sherelle. Sonics did at that time.
First round, right?
First round. Late. Great shooter, about 6'4", 6'5". Okay. Just, you know, the
6'4"?
6'5", 6'6", maybe 6'6", but he was long, but a great shooter. His shooting was his forte, but he never... Eric Snow, I think he and Eric Snow may have come in around the same time, and he was the higher regarded of the two that was supposed to have the longer-lasting career, which leads me to this. What's the key? What's the key to a player like that not making it, making it, that has the talent? We had a guy in Milwaukee from... UNLV, first round pick, about the 17th pick.
Elmore?
From Minnesota, from Minneapolis, shooter. Oh boy, I'm drawing a blank on his name. I'll think of it in a second. But he was supposed, he got hurt his freshman year in UNLV, still averaged about 16, 17 a game. We picked him up in the first round. I think he went out and bought like a tarantula, spider, a cobra, snake, and some other wild.
One of those dudes.
And one of our executives like made him sell them all within a week. Like, no, you can't. No, you're not doing all that here. No, it's not going on. But what's the difference between guys that come in with all that fanfare and make it, and guys that just make it?
I think the biggest thing is, and I always say this, when you get drafted, great that you get drafted 1 or 20 or 30, but like once the draft's over, it's like everybody's lumped into the same.
Yeah.
And like it's okay to exhale and say I'm in the NBA, but a year from now there's going to be another 60 guys that are going to come through and they're going to take your spot.
Yeah.
Facts. And that's the reality. And then then when you get to year 4, you know, a good example is, you know, with in Milwaukee with like Marjon Beauchamp, who I think has, you know, listen, I think there's still a story to be told for him, right?
Sure.
I don't think that he, you know, but he's in year 3 and his fourth year option doesn't get picked up. And, you know, there's going to be another guy. And, you know, there's a Jake LaRavian in Memphis, is another who's having a really good year, who kind of defied a little bit of, you know, them declining his option. But I just think like sometimes guys think once they get drafted, they're going to be in the league for a long time. But once next year, there's a guy in college who's going to be taking, you know, AJ Johnson spot 3 years. You know, if AJ doesn't, you know, develop into what I think Milwaukee thinks he's going to be and everything. So, and then there's guys like AJ Green, right? Like guys who are like, man, I'm undrafted. I got to go through the circuit, summer league, trying to win a spot. I got a major chip on my shoulder.
Yep.
The guys who have a chip on their shoulder, certainly if you're a shooter, that helps.
Yep.
But if you got a chip on your shoulder, but it's there's 30 teams, 450 spots, and then you have 92 ways combined there. It's not a lot there.
No, it's not.
How long? So Rashad Vaughn was the guy.
Rashad Vaughn.
There it is.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to really recognize if a guy, if you're looking at a Marjon Beauchamp, if you're looking at Andre Jackson Jr. or Derry Bird, what the announcer the other night actually called him Derry Bird during the broadcast that was announced. Who was it? Brian Anderson announcing with Stan
Van Gundy. Derry Bird.
They actually called him Derry Bird. Right. That's a great story behind that. But how long does it take you to, is it a year, is it 2 years? Can you tell after when he hits the floor after the first few games, like this guy's got that it factor?
Well, I mean, I think your first year, usually you're not going to see a rookie out there taking a huge leap. I think it's going, you know, from year 1 to 2. I always tell the funny story because I worked for Rod Thorne for 10 years, and Rod would always have buyer's remorse after every draft. And Rod was tight with Jerry West. And we would pick a guy, and Rod, Jerry told me that we shouldn't have taken this guy. So if it was up to Rod Thorne, it would be a day. Because the funny story is Derek Favors, who we drafted in 2010, who went to Georgia Tech. And Derek, summer league kind of skews your mind a little bit as far as what players are. And Derek was terrible in his first game, and Rod is like, I told you, we shouldn't have drafted this guy. I go, Rod, it's been one day.
Yeah,
you know, so I think In all seriousness, I think by year two, I think you've got to start seeing some things out of that player as far as, okay, is he a rotational player? Okay, maybe the third year he can become a starter.
Right.
Maybe he never can be a starter, but at least he can be kind of part of our core moving forward.
Yeah. I did a game, Georgia Tech, when Derek Favors was there. That, I think Iman Shumpert was on that team.
Yeah.
They had another guy who I thought was going to be the guy. Gotti Lawal.
Big, strong beast.
You know, I thought he'd be the guy, and Derek Favors would be the guy struggling to make it in the league.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's just the unpredictability of kind of knowing.
You just never, like, listen, we had, that was the year DeMarcus Cousins was in the draft.
Right, okay.
And it came down to DeMarcus Cousins or Derek Favors, who I think DeMarcus went 5. We took Derek at 3. And we picked Derek because we thought he had a little more trade value than DeMarcus because DeMarcus was a wild card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, seriously. And we wound up trading.
What, from just the attitude?
Just from an added, like, from a, you know, from
you
that.
Didn't
like,
know?
I think Derek, I mean, I think DeMarcus had the overall talent.
Sure.
But from a trade, like, if we were looking to move somebody down the road, Derek would probably be a little bit easier to do. And Derek didn't want to work out against DeMarcus. DeMarcus did. You know, back when you have individual workouts and guys are like, no, I'm not working out. And, and DeMarcus was like, I want to work out against Derek Favors. And, and so it was an interesting interesting spot.
Did, real quick on that individual workout stuff, because I remember that era pretty well. Did those workouts carry a lot of weight to you guys?
Well, I'll tell you what, back then you could have your own players work out against draft prospects. So going back to Ed O'Bannon, Kobe comes out in 96. And so when we were talking about, like, how, you know, with me, a football guy learning the basketball, Willis said to me, get on the train, go down to Philly. There's a 17-year-old playing a state playoff game. I want you to watch him. I'm not going to tell you what his name is. And it was Kobe playing at LaSalle. And I said, like, I saw, I'm sitting there while I'm like, oh my God. Like, like, I think that's sometimes the best way to scout guys, like, not know who they are.
Yeah.
And so Kobe comes in 96 for his draft workouts, and he worked out against Ed O'Bannon and Khalid Reeves. And you were allowed to do that back then, and he destroyed them.
Damn!
And we had upgraded. We had gone from APA Trucking to Fairleigh Dickinson University. Had upgraded. And I was like, God, this guy is special here. So I think that helps.
Yeah.
When you're working out against NBA guys.
Sure.
I don't, the other stuff, I mean, you don't play 3-on-3.
Right.
Right? I think it helps more the coaches a little bit as far as from a coachability standpoint. 1-on-0. I saw Tracy McGrady work out in 97, and he had a great workout. Keith Van Horn had a great workout. You go 1-on-0, and you shoot the ball really well.
Oh, you drafted Keith, too?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Keith's from out here.
Yes.
Diamond Bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Used to play head up with Keith. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
It started with a prediction.
Go out there and play basketball and win.
And how many games?
6.
It became the culture.
Chance of Bucks in 6.
Being a Bucks fan means you live and breathe Bucks in 6. Brandon Jennings created the prophecy. Tune into Behind the Bucks, the story of Brandon Jennings on the Bucks Plus Audio Network. Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Available now on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
That's for the culture.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus Audio production.
Marcus Johnson, first mate, my son Chris Johnson, joined by Bobby Marks, who is an insider, capologist. What do you like to be called?
Yeah.
What's your
title, Bobby?
I don't know what my title is. I'm just the, I always say that our people at ESPN, I'm like the screenwriter, right? I just kind of stay in the background, try to help people out, make them look good on TV, and just kind of provide them information, and then once in a while come on and say, you know, give my 2 cents.
So you'll give the information to the Kendrick Perkinsons and
if I do, he's not listening to me. I said to
him, here's a funny story.
So on Tuesday we did TV, and I said to my wife after TV, I said, you know, I got my TV stripes now, and I'm agreeing with Perk on TV. But I said to Perk, because he mentioned he did like a trade.
Usually
when I'm sitting at home and I'm watching a show and I'm texting the producer, I'm like, oh my God, Perk. Yesterday I said, like, Perk, I think you got a good idea then. My wife said, oh my God, now you're a real TV personality. You're agreeing with Perk and stuff. So I think at the end, I'm just trying to help them.
Yeah.
Trying to, like, you know, not throw crazy stuff. And it goes back to, like, yeah, certainly with, like, Milwaukee.
Sure.
Like, listen, Milwaukee gets out to a 2-8 start, and everybody says Giannis has to be traded. Dame should be asked to be traded. And I went on TV. I did SportsCenter. 7 a.m. Sports Center, and I said, listen, long season, they got 72 games left. I've talked to people. Giannis is not asking to be traded, nor Milwaukee is asking to trade him. Same with Damian Lillard.
Okay.
And people were floored. And I said, well, no, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes when you tell the truth, they don't want to believe it.
Mm.
There has to be a narrative that they're 2-8. He's, you know, they're not going to win a championship. Yeah. He needs to be asked. And I'm like, well, no, like, let this thing breathe a little bit here. And I think that's kind of the segue where this season is with, and you guys know this, I mean, this 82 games is a long year. There's a lot of things that can happen here. Yeah. And certainly them playing a lot better basketball, I think, certainly helps.
Absolutely. How much are the Bucks in their current state, like the roster, how much are they hampered by the getting under the second apron?
Yeah.
Like, explain that a little bit, Bobby, because that gets a little confusing for a lot of folks.
Apronologists, yes.
So the rules that came in 2023, basically the goal from the NBA, and a lot of it had to do with Golden State and the Clippers, Brooklyn too, the teams that spent a lot of money, that they wanted to restrict teams on how you can add to your roster outside of keeping your own players.
Mm-hmm.
So that means making a trade. So like they go out and trade for Damian a year ago, and they did that under the current rules, but the rules were a little more looser, so they were able to do it here.
Yeah.
That hurts Milwaukee as far as moving forward, because when you look at them, they are a second apron team. So what does that mean? That they cannot go out and trade for, they cannot trade a $10 million player and take back a $12 million player.
Got it.
They cannot go out and trade two players together.
Mm.
Okay, so if
what's the term for that? There's a term.
Aggregate. Yes, aggregate. I always put combined. Yeah. I'm not, my marriage education is not there. I say combined. So you can't sign a player, you know, who's bought out of his contract and makes more than, you know, $13 million. You can't send cash out in a deal. So it limits you as far as how you can go out and add a player. Their Phoenix is in the same position here, so it does make it more restrictive. I had an article that I had written that we basically put it in a can because Milwaukee started winning. And it's basically just kind of looking at their options here moving forward. And one of the big things out of that was the draft.
Okay.
So Milwaukee drafts A.J. Johnson, who is an 18-year-old, and Tyler Smith, right, in the second round. And both guys are development guys.
Yeah, sure.
And the skepticism from teams, not within the Bucks organization, was, well, here's a win-now team.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't you go for more of a win now player? I don't, you know, like Ryan Dunn from Virginia, right? Like guy who can come in and play. Terrence Shannon was another player, who can come in and play. Now you can get away with that because now you got AJ Green and you've got
Andre Jackson Jr.
Have stepped up,
right?
Right, like so now you can let the other two guys play in your developmental system.
Yeah,
and a year from now, or maybe we get to March, those guys can come in and play. You have to hit on your draft picks. You got to hit on your draft picks, and you also have to find those under the radar guys. Because what happens is, and I saw this in New Jersey when we had Jason Kidd and Kerry. We had Richard Jefferson and we had Vince Carter, is that your players get older.
Yeah.
And eventually you have to have that next layer of players to come through the pipeline here.
Ready to go.
And we didn't have that. We missed out on Sean Williams, Antoine Wright, Marcus Williams, Josh Boone. Three years in a row of draft picks that we missed on.
Dang.
So if you're Milwaukee, what you drafted this year, you got to hit on those guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you got to have those guys. Maybe not right now. But come up and be part of your rotation, because if you're a high-spending team, when you have two players like Dame and Giannis who make close to $50 million each, it limits you as far as what you add from the outside, as far as what you can bring into your organization.
So, like, what can the Bucks do? Like, is the best-case sort of scenario?
So, listen, they're getting Chris back.
Right.
Yeah.
Was you know, monumental. That's like an in-season trade.
Yeah.
Especially when you didn't have him in the beginning here, and I think the Orlando game, and people look at, well, you know, he didn't shoot the ball, and he had 8 assists.
Yeah. I mean, 19, that's what he did.
Yeah. You had another playmaker there.
Yep.
So getting Chris back helps. They're top heavy in salary. I think 80% of their salary is Dame, Giannis, Brooke, and Chris.
Yeah.
So that's why I went on TV a few weeks ago and I said, listen, what Milwaukee's faced with their schedule, like, they got to take advantage of this.
Yeah.
They had a little bit of a soft schedule coming up. Yeah. Like, you got to go 9-2. And I think they did go 9-2. And you got to just stack wins and stuff like yeah. that. And kind of, you know, what the roster is, you know, what the roster is. Gary Trent, Torian Prince, DeLon Wright, the guys that you signed for minimum contracts. You got to get those guys. You know, Gary's playing, you know, playing really well. Sure. Like, those are the guys that you're more reliable outside of your main guys.
Yeah, it's funny because I looked at the schedule through the end of January. We play Cleveland coming up. I don't think there's really any other, like, winning record type playoff juggernaut yep. teams on the schedule.
Right.
I mean, this team could almost be 12 to 13, 14 games over 500, 29 and 14 or 15, something I looked at. So this is, you're right. I mean, this yeah. is, this is, you got to fatten up right now yeah. on the wins because you know what's going to happen after the All-Star
break. Yeah, and the East, like how the Eastern Conference is, you know, they'll never allow you to get away from kind of in the playoff race. Like Philadelphia, for example, yeah. like they're like 7 and 15 and they're a game out of 10th. So it'll keep you in it. But here's the thing, and I've talked to people within, you know, close to the Bucks organization, like, what is the goal? Like, are we just moving the goalpost now? Yeah. Like, is it now, oh, now we got to be a playing team? No. The goal yeah. is to be a top six team and hopefully avoid Boston as far as you can. Like, right. No offense. Cleveland's a nice story. I'll take my shot with Cleveland. Yeah. You know, like, I'll take, you know, listen, you can play with Cleveland.
Right.
Boston's a little bit of a different animal. Like, you want Boston in the conference finals and hopefully, you know, no offense, you want, like, it's an injury to happen. You know, like, I sure, mean, that's yeah. what you need to happen.
Brown yeah. hobbled. Yeah, yeah. Right. Drew Holiday, you know, whatever, bad back or something. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing serious, but right. just enough. Yeah. No, without question. Talk about Giannis. Now, you wrote about Giannis not wanting to go anywhere yeah. and all that good stuff. You're seeing what he's doing right now. He's come out and said he wants a third MVP. And yeah. that's huge for Giannis to publicly come out and admit that's yeah. on the, you know, we all know underneath the surface that's kind of who he is, and he likes that stuff. He didn't like to fess up to it, but right now he's putting it out there, man.
I mean, listen, he's you know, and certainly with Damian coming back, he's put them on his shoulders, and it's really carried yeah. This group here, and I yeah. think he will have a legitimate shot. They've got to win. Yeah. I think that's part of it. I mean, I think it'll be interesting, you know, what happens with, you know, Jokic is having another year, but what happens if these guys are in the fifth seed or sixth yeah. seed? And the beauty of it, and I shared the stat with our group earlier, is you're going to be blown away when I say this. Out of the all NBA players, 72% will not meet the 65-game criteria.
For awards?
For awards.
What?
Will either have not already or are on pace to not meet the 65-game criteria. So when you look at it, there's a 28% pool of players
that are going to qualify
for these awards here.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
You said, wait, out of all, not
out of
not,
the entire league.
Out of the
440 players this year. We are on pace that 72% of them are not going to qualify for the 65-game criteria.
That's nuts. That is crazy.
What's the problem?
We've got a lot of injuries.
Why do you think the injuries have kind of crept up?
You know what? Like, I've never seen so many guys miss games with an abductor.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. we've seen it. Like, the guys in Orlando, Bancaro and Wagner. And, you know, like, there's, like, the New Orleans. I mean, New Orleans and Memphis of last year. Yeah. There's been a lot. Like, it's come in dominoes there. It's kind of just picked up.
But you don't see, I mean, it's any thing that common denominator that maybe, that I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I mean, we're on a weird schedule right now where we're kind of like a week off. It's kind of like a all-star break-ish type thing with the NBA Cup going on and yeah. everything like that. So maybe that will help from a rest standpoint. Yeah, I don't facts. Know.
I know, because like in Japan, they talk about the players, their pitchers. They work them extra hard. They throw on off days. They feel like the more they, some people have speculated that these guys maybe don't come into camp, don't work out as hard as they need to.
Well, I'd love to see a study on training camp.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, when we were back in the day, we were going real double camp. Sessions.
Real camp.
Like,
real yeah. camp.
Thank right. you. Thanks.
Like Byron was making these guys throw up in the middle of Keno. Like,
we went 30
trash
days.
Cans
we went
on the sideline.
We went 30 straight days yeah. or 2-a-days.
Yeah. With Nelly?
Yes, yes. 30 straight. We had an exhibition game sprinkled in here and there.
30 straight?
But 30 straight, a month of 2-a-days before the regular season, plus 10 exhibition games or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
And not to go back into the old school stuff, but yeah, yeah. So
maybe that's it. You know, maybe that's it. You know, from a, I don't know if we're going to just start putting more 2-days in, but maybe we expand, you yeah. know, camp a little bit more. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, man. But look, man, final question. Eastern Conference, you talked about it. I mean, so Bucks were picked to finish, what, 5th, 6th,
8th,
play-in, 8th, somewhere 7th. In there.
Well, somebody had them 7th, yeah, ringer, yeah, but, I don't know.
And it's the Pacers. I hate to digress, but what's going on with the Pacers? Pacers.
Well, here's the thing. Like, and I said, I wrote this a year ago because we were talking about these rules and how to build a roster, and I said Indiana is probably the model back then, a year ago, how to build a roster when you have Halliburton and Siakam, two guys. Those are your two guys.
Yep.
And then we got a lot of guys like that, $10 million and $19 million. Miles Turner and
yeah.
Mathurin and Nesmith and mm-hmm. Nembhard. Mm-hmm. And, like, mm-hmm. we have a group of those guys, like, you know.
T.J. McConnell,
yeah. right? Yep. Everyone yep. kind of knows their role. But when you look at it this year, okay, if you have two of those $40 million guys, one of them's, you know, Halliburton struggled.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if it's his confidence. I don't know. I mean, everyone's, you know, ever since he got hurt, that's kind of, you know, they give up a lot of points.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, they give up a lot. And now their offense is struggling here. It's kind of like, it's like one thing is working, another thing isn't here. And I thought continuity, I think continuity matters and everything, but they're the one team that I didn't think would get out of the gate pretty slow, but they certainly are.
Carl Anthony Towns, I've heard people say, is he tough enough to play 5 the entire season? Is that a mistake to put him at the 5?
I'm interested if Mitchell Robinson gets back.
Right.
You know, maybe you put those two together, if Mitchell's healthy, and then you get Josh Hart come off the bench.
Yeah.
That's intriguing to me, but he's got to come back healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, man, we got the Bucks
good.
Playing better basketball. 11-4 over the last 15, that Orlando game as of this taping. A lot of people are knocking, not a lot, who knocked them? Sam, your boy.
Sam Mitchell.
Yeah, your veteran when you were
Sam
in
was
Minnesota
on
training camp. Sam Mitchell and yeah. Eddie Johnson on Sirius. They were talking about two All-Stars missing, Wagner and Bancaro, and you still struggle. Like I was telling Chris, man, they've got some players who took the opportunity.
Yeah.
Jet Howard, Black, Anthony Black. Sure. I mean, they got some players that, man, that took that opportunity and ran with it. And Mosley's a good coach.
They beat Phoenix a couple nights ago without those guys. They have a next man up mentality here, where, you know, you have Suggs and some of the younger players and the other Wagner and Goga, and they play hard. They got
hard.
A defensive mentality. But I always say, like, you know, from Milwaukee's standpoint, at the end, and I said this to Malika Andrews a month ago, because we were talking about Denver, who was struggling.
Right.
And they had won in Brooklyn in, like, double overtime. I go, Malika, still counts as a W in the standings.
Yes,
they don't say, like, hey, double overtime to a rebuilding Nets team.
We
it still
care.
Counts in the standings.
And, you know, a year ago, a month, whatever, this team, that would have been a game that this team would have lost. I'm watching that game and thinking to myself, well, it looks like they don't want to really go to Vegas, because they're not playing like they want to go to Vegas, but then able to pull it out. So that's good stuff, man. But look, man, we appreciate you coming by. And we got to get you back on here once the season gets a little deeper into it, closer to the playoffs, man. And just a lot of good stuff, and especially trekking through the old school stuff.
We could talk old school forever. I always said to my wife, the book that will never get published would be pretty good to read.
Heck yeah.
I got to get you back on just to talk about Marcus Williams. He's a Crenshaw guy. Crenshaw
same high school.
Kind of see what happened to him, man. But look, man, we're going to let you get out of here. Bobby Marks, ESPN insider, capologist, all that good stuff, man. We thank you for coming by and appreciate you so much. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All Thanks, Bobby.
From the biggest plays on the court to the comments made in the locker room after, an in-depth recap of every Bucks game in 6 minutes. No more, no less. Bucks in 6 provides game recaps for every game. Hear the high-flying dunks from Giannis.
Puts it on the floor, spins down the lane, and plunges it through.
Or the deep threes from Dame.
Dame time has arrived with 107.
Bucks in 6 on the Bucks Plus Audio Network. Find it now on Bucks.com/plus or on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus Audio production.
All right, welcome back to Here District. Marcus Johnson, captain of this vessel. Chris Johnson, first mate. Great interview with Bobby Marks talking about them aprons, man.
Them aprons.
First apron, apron strings hanging on to the apron. Let go of the apron, little boy. Let it go. just so much apron talk.
What
man.
Is that from? Why are you always evoking stuff that I have no idea what scene, what movie?
It's no specific.
What is that?
It's more like, you know, a father knows best in June. Or,
Father knows best. June, like, what is June, Father knows you know, best?
The wife and Beaver holding on.
Who
to
is
the,
June?
They always had an apron on. Donna Reed.
You're hilarious.
The apron. They always...
So you have all these memories just of stuff, TV stuff in your head. Man. You're like Josiah. That's where Josiah gets all his doggone genius from.
What do you think?
It's from MJ.
He can pull stuff out of his behind and the drop.
I see. But how come I didn't get none of that? I guess we all. So Joe might have been gravitated towards that. I gravitated towards the basketball more.
You know, Joe was the UES Elementary School, University of Elementary School on Seeds on UCLA's campus. Which
I went there.
He went to school with John Lithgow's daughter.
Yeah.
And the who's the director? God, I can't think of the guy's name.
Oh, Rebecca, from
Rebecca was his daughter's name, but I will stop thinking. But
John Landis.
Yeah, John Landis. John Landis. Is, you know. So and then he went to Crossroads. You know.
Oh yeah. With that crew.
All the artsy-fartsy.
We talked about that with J.A. We talked about that with J.A.
All the artsy-fartsy
artsy-fartsy.
You know, you was like trying to be a Crip and Crenshaw, you know, back
then. Trying.
Please. And then Joe likes to say, I'm the first Crip to win the Wooden Award of Player of the Year or something. But
that's what Matt Barnes says.
Yeah, it's kind of a overstatement. But, hey, Crip or Christian, we don't know. We're trying, man. But listen, let's talk about something that I posted on Twitter. You get a chance, check it out, Old School 888. It'll be a few days ago by the time this drops, but that's okay. But it's after the Orlando game, and it's actually during the Orlando game, Jalen Suggs, who I hate to give any kind of props whatsoever based on what he did to our beloved Bruins.
Suggy
with the, what was it, half-court bank or something.
Half-court bank half to go court, to the national championship
half
game.
Half-court bank, and that was my Johnny Zuzang.
Ended Jaime Jaquez Jr.'s career.
Jaime Jaquez, man. We
Triple
had,
J done after
man,
that.
Man, but both those guys, Johnny Zuzang and Jaime, are doing greatest pros.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Zuzang, especially in Utah.
Please, buckets. He busted the Bucks. Remember Johnny had like 16 on the Bucks?
And that's just so good to see because he kind of, you know, some question as whether or not he had the athleticism, the quickness.
He got that jumper.
He got the jumper. He got the mindset. He got the mindset. And that's what we're talking about, mindset, culture. And I posted this thing on Jalen Suggs talking about this culture in Orlando. This next man up was the question. Yeah. He talked about love. He threw out words like loving each other and encouraging each other and nurturing each other.
For sure.
And we were talking earlier about how this new breed of ball player.
They need that mama love.
They need a lot of mothering.
They absolutely do.
And it's not a bad
thing. And there's nothing wrong with mothering.
Yeah.
See, Dad, you come from, you know, the era of before. We kind of frowned upon that.
Yeah.
But the mothering thing.
Well,
now,
soft.
But look, mothering now in athletes is a big deal. It's encouraged. You see, remember Caleb Wilson, Caleb Williams, the quarterback from SC.
Sure.
Remember he ran into the stands
after
a loss, went right to his mama. Kids, dear mama, the whole era of Tupac and loving your mom, like it's no longer uncool to be a mama's boy.
Yeah.
And so the type of love, the type of motivation, the type of inspiration that you can get out of a certain type of nurturing, it's a lot different than it used to be, man.
So even though you were a crack fiend, mama, what's the other line? You were
queen.
Black queen, mama.
Come on.
Yeah. So no matter what, you know, and I just say that in the context of just how powerful that impact is on these young fellas. And so now these, the good modern day coaches.
Right.
Have to plug
tap into that kind of mindset
and nurture. And it reminds me of a story, and this may or may not make the broadcast because it's kind of some proprietary information, but it was 7 or 8 years ago when I first started working with the Bucks, and they were having a team meeting. I guess Jason Kidd lit into Chris Middleton so bad that Chris Middleton just walked out of the meeting.
Wow.
And that's what when I heard from people that knew that was kind of the beginning of the end because Jason Kidd's way at that time was just a little bit too abrasive, a little bit too up in, you know, old school, confrontational. I'm up in your face, you know.
Right.
And the ball players of that time, and this is 7, 8 years ago, so it's still the current time, but it was just a little too much. And You just needed a different kind of an approach.
Well, you got to balance it out, right, MJ? So I got to be able to tear you a new one, and then in the next breath, I'm bigging you up.
Yeah.
And I mean it, and I'm genuine. So a lot of the new age coaches do a magnificent job of connecting with guys, communicating with guys. Right. So the guys are talking to people every day. I was listening to Chris Beard, who's the head coach down at, doggone, where's Chris Beard at now?
Well, wherever, Auburn.
He's the former. Yeah, no, he's somewhere
he
else.
At Alabama. He was at
Texas Tech, Texas, then somewhere else. But anyway, Chris Beard was talking about how every day he texts, has a text exchange with every single one of his players just to keep that connectivity, keep that relationship going. And I know for a fact that down in Orlando, under Coach Jamal Mosley. Mose, who's I know through the years, we've crossed paths several times on the basketball court and then outside the court, several mutual friends had spent some time with Mose last year in Vegas. Mose takes that approach with these guys. He's definitely in the communication, but he's also the Mr. Build you up, tear you down, build you up, tear you down. I don't know if you listened to the game, MJ, but they had Coach Mosley on a hot mic.
Man.
And that gave us all some tremendous insight into how this guy is able to communicate with his players and how the players are so bought in that they're literally, he's yelling out, do this, do that, X, Y, and Z, but screaming it, barking it, and guys are actually doing it
kick
on
out,
the floor.
Penetrate, kick out.
And they're doing it.
The exact same thing he's barking out that we're hearing on the hot mic. The players are executing the exact specific maneuver, which lets you know. And I mean, a lot of guys, if they're not bought in, they do the opposite. They would, you know what I mean? They'd have this kind of
F that
attitude and just
I'm going slower
contrarian,
now.
Contrarian, and I'm going to
kick it. I'm gonna pull.
I'm pulling. You know, yeah. I ain't got my requisite amount of shot. They were bought in, man, all the way.
And that's why, MJ, it's part of it is because of the youth. Part of it is because of just the state of today's NBA. But the whole fundamentally how you coach NBA players in the year 2024 moving forward has got to be different than the way that you guys were coached even 10 years ago. So the great coaches, the great NBA programs, the championship-level programs – are going to start to implement these changes if they haven't already. You look at OKC, you look at Orlando, you look around the league at some of the top up-and-coming teams. That's sort of the mold that people are going to start mimicking.
Well, listen, so a good friend of mine and business partner, she's my publicist, Jerrica Williams.
Jerrica, that's the homie.
All Jay, you've interviewed her on your podcast before, but she was one of the first kind of assistant coaches.
In men's basketball,
Detroit Mercy. I mean, and coach high school at Windward and coach high school at Detroit Country Day and led them to the Final Four in the Michigan. She's done some great things in a short period of time, but she's really into this empowerment of the current athletes. And you were talking about that with Jamal Mosley, looking at Batadze Goga, the way he's dribbling up the
floor.
Well,
if you listen to if you go back and watch the broadcast, you would hear Mose on a couple of different possessions when the big fella Goga got the rebound, 7-footer, somebody you would not expect to be able to bring it up, but he's telling them, you handle it.
Yeah.
You handle it. So he's empowering the guy to not only bring it up, but initiate the offense. Now think about that.
Yeah.
You got a 7-footer who isn't the most athletic, sweetest handle, et cetera.
About to start a team. But Jokic.
But you're letting him bring in that thing up and initiating offense. That shows you just the level of like versatility that you have to operate with as a coach. And it's also buy-in because now Goga's not coming down and turning it over.
Right.
He's locked in.
Right. So, and people talk about, I've heard Sam Mitchell and when you and Sam are just one of your best buddies in basketball.
Well, Sam's an interesting guy. You know, Sam's an interesting dude. I was in training camp. Quick story. I was in training camp with Minnesota.
Okay.
The Timberwolves, 1999, right when the lockout ended.
Okay.
In 99. So it's KG, it's Steph, it's Anthony Peeler, it's Sam Mitchell, it's some high level. Troy Hudson was in the building. It's some high level guys.
Anthony Peeler, who we see walking around the neighborhood.
AP
all the time.
With the dog, with his dogs. AP, he's at our walking park every day with the dogs. Former Laker, right? Yeah. LA, ESPN LA. Former Laker, Anthony Peeler, Missouri. Anyway, we were doing a running drill. right? I forgot what the drill was, but it's one of those things where you go one after the other.
Right.
And if you had to go twice or three times in a row, you know, you're going to, you know, probably throw up probably be on your knees. So Sam Mitchell, hey, young fella, this is to me. Hey, Rook, hey, young fella, go ahead, go. So I went once, right? I come back, I finish the drill. Hey, young fella, go ahead. I'm like, hold on, man, I just went. Hey, young fella, come on, Rook. Hey, Rook. And then, you know, back, you know, MJ, that the culture of the NBA back then, when you're a rookie and you're going up against a veteran, there's not really a lot of questioning you can do of the word. Because you got
how tough that was for you,
You got the other vets, and you got the other vets kind of chiming in. Like, come on, young fella, don't talk back. Yeah. Like, what's going on, man?
Yeah.
So I had to suck it up, and I went about six or seven times in a row. Flip Saunders, rest in peace, he was the coach. I had to throw up in a trash can in front of Flip.
Yeah.
You know, I'm throwing up in front of Flip on the doggone sideline. It's because of Sam doggone Mitchell, and I've never forgave Sam, and I still haven't seen him. I still got something to say to that brother when I see him.
Okay, all right.
Nah, but just play. That's my guy.
No, it's all good. It's all good, man. But so that reminds me of White Men Can't Jump.
Oh, shoot.
So we're doing our training camp at Rancho Park.
We're Dorsey.
Near Dorsey High School. South Central L.A.
Yes, so sir.
Every morning, forgot his last name, Baker.
The coach?
Dick Baker, coach at Loyola.
Yeah.
So he was running training camp, regular drills, had about 20, 25 guys who were in scenes in the movie trying to get us in shape. Ron Shelton.
Legit, like, guys like who?
Was
it the legit guy? Was it Rex Walters?
No. This was like the Kevin Benton actors.
Okay, the actors.
So he wanted to get a bunch of actors. Kevin Benton, the
Dwayne
great actor.
Dwayne Martin.
Kadeem Hardison.
Right.
So it was Wesley Snipes. It was Woody Harrelson.
Right.
Everybody's in this training camp every morning, 10 to 12 noon, 5 days a week, going hard.
Yeah.
Going Nigel McGale, you know, was there. Yeah, my guy Nige. Going at each other. Silk Cozart. You know, these are some of the guys that were there. Yeah. So, you know. And so he had us doing this three-man, just a basic three-man weave drill, but if you messed up, you had to do it again.
Oh, Lord.
Wesley Snipes, not a basketball player, but a great athlete, can stand flat-footed and grab the rim at 5'8", 5'9". He could not get this three-man weave down to save his life. So whoever went with Wesley, you're going to have to go three or four times.
Oh, wow.
So when Wesley would get to the front of the line, and I'm at the front of the line, I see I have to go with Wesley. I'd bend over and, like, untie my shoe. Oh, yeah, I got to untie my shoe. Could you go? Hey, man, you go ahead of me, man. And so, you know, so all the veterans started doing that. And Wesley, after four or five times, finally picked up on it. He's like, okay, yeah, I see what you meant for it to do it. Forget all this. Just give me 2 weeks. Give me 2 weeks. And I'd be damned if after 2 weeks he got that three-man weave down. So it reminds me of kind of little thing we did with Wesley Snipes in that movie, man.
That's dope.
But listen, man, so we're talking about the Magic. I'm listening to, and great Magic culture, great young players, but I'm listening to the broadcast on TNT, halftime.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
And this is our segment that we call About That Action.
Right.
Where we're going to have some video support to what we're talking about. All right. So cue it up. Dylan, get ready. About That Action. Charles Barkley, Chris, came on and said that the Bucks are one of the worst perimeter defensive teams he'd ever seen in his life. And so I just want to walk through some of this stuff in terms of some of that porous perimeter defense that he was talking about. And just look at what was going on out there that could have been a little bit better. So if we run the first clip. And this is a situation where, let me move screen around a little bit. Okay, so right here, Dame Lillard gets caught up on a screen. Now watch Giannis. Run it back a little. Take it back a little bit, Dylan. Watch Giannis and his help position, Chris. And you tell me what he could have done better. You see Giannis with the bright shoes on.
He's got Wendell Carter Jr. in the corner, so he's kind of trying to creep towards him.
But here comes
Let's
the shooter.
See the play.
Here comes the shooter. Who's that shooter? That's KCP. Giannis doesn't move.
Okay.
He's guarding Wendell Carter Jr. Wendell Carter Jr. is 5-for-27 from the three-point line.
Right.
He's 18%.
Right.
You know, it's actually 18.5. We usually round up, but for the purposes of this argument, I'm going to round down. He's 18%.
Who started rounding up? But back to this play, right? It looks like Giannis expected Dame to get through a lot quicker.
Dame?
Look.
You're going to expect Dame to get through a lot quicker?
Obviously, because why wouldn't you help? To me, why wouldn't you help? Since you said that.
Right. Freeze it. If you freeze
it. And he also thinks Brooke is there. Like, come on.
No, Brooke is in drop. Brooke is in drop defense. Now, I would have Brooke more
up the
touch.
Why is Brooke in drop?
But look what's going on Giannis's side. He's got Torian Prince, and Torian Prince is offensive player on that side. So it's nowhere really for Wendell Carter to go. So if Giannis, all I'm saying is that Giannis has got to stunt. Just stunt. Go up a step or two and stunt and give something for KCP to think about coming off of that that dribble handoff.
It's also early in the first quarter.
Yeah, yeah. No,
so
it is.
That part, too.
Warming up.
They're Bucks are not starting out with that straight up gas, all gas, all the time. We stunt here, we stunt there. They're not the Magic. They're not OKC. So these guys, like they work into their defense. They start getting it going, getting the stops when it really matters, like in the third and the fourth.
And to your point, brilliant observation. Number one, son. Brilliant observation, because Darvin Ham, talking with him 5 years ago with Coach Budenholzer, why don't you guys stunt earlier? We don't want to show our hand
at
the start of the game.
Thank you.
We want to slowly increase the pressure, get these guys in a comfort zone, thinking that opening's going to be there.
It's going to be there.
And then all of a sudden, we make the adjustment. So my point is, when you're listening to Charles Barkley, these guys talk about porous defense,
right,
there's a method to the madness. You don't want to show everything right off the bat.
That's a great point.
It may look like... Yeah. You know, that the defense is lacking, but there's actually a method to that.
It's so easy to cherry pick, dude, when you're sitting in these seats and cherry pick a play that you don't even know what the scheme is. Yeah. Maybe Giannis told them, don't stunt on these. Yeah. Don't stunt on the first three jumpers.
Right.
That's the part that's the fine line.
Yeah, we'll wait. We'll wait.
But it's just all about, you know, when Chuck gets on there and says it's all about the delivery.
And we
it's
love
all
Chuck.
About,
and
you
we
know,
love
it's
Chuck.
All about entertainment,
we love Chuck. So second play. Second play, let's get right through these. Second play. I love this. So if we freeze it here, freeze it right in there. Great transition defense, four guys back. You're stopping the basketball. Let it run. I love the transition defense here. Now, ball kicks back out. Watch this retreat dribble by KCP. Now, freeze it here. He's defended by Brook Lopez.
Right.
Do you want to? I know it's early still. Still first quarter. Still beginning of the game. You don't want to show your hand too soon.
Trap.
Do you help Brook out? Do you leave him on an island with a smaller, quicker player? Or do you, at this point in the game, help him out, have a defender? I think it's Damian Lillard, maybe more to the nail, toward the nail as opposed to the three-point line. You know he's going
to
get beat.
I mean, what if Doc's telling everybody just to stay home?
Yeah,
and let Brook, hey, Brook, you're on your own. Brook, hey, Brook, you're on your own.
Hey, Brook, you're on your own.
You're on your own.
But I know that Greg Buckner, the defensive coordinator, he's a big nail guy. He's a big, like, get somebody at
so
the
let's
nail.
So let's see how to kind of
run it through.
Happens.
Run it through. And this is great. In and out, I'm by you. And that's just a nice job by KCP beating Brook. Who's he supposed to? Brook is 7'1", 285 pounds, even though he's quicker and all that good stuff. But I think on the retreat, and maybe not in this situation because it's early, but if it's a crucial possession of the game, once you see a guy retreat, what is he trying to do? He's trying to get that runway to get downhill,
right?
He knows he's got an advantage. And so, yes, I mean, perimeter defense was porous in this possession, but in the context of what happened, KCP against Brook, retreat, runway, get by him. I don't have a major problem with that.
Yeah.
Okay? Third play, final play. Mm-hmm. Similar situation. Transition defense is there. If we run it back a little bit. Now, when Giannis closes out again on Wendell Carter Jr., freeze it, Dylan, right when Giannis is running toward Wendell Carter Jr., when he catches the ball, right in there. Here comes Giannis with the what color shoes are those? Like
fuchsia, mauve, or
the fuchsia, mauve, Greek freaks. But again, you've got a 18% 3-point shooter, 5 for 27 coming into this game.
So what are you saying? KYP. How should he close? So
well, I don't think you close out on the side of him.
Angle was Giannis supposed to take?
I think you take you get to the elbow angle. You get in front of him. You get in front of him and give him a cushion like they give Giannis when he's got the ball.
That's KCP.
No. That's Wendell.
Oh, that's Wendell?
Wendell Carter Jr. That's Wendell Carter, whatever. That's Wendell. That's Wendell that Giannis is guarding. So Giannis runs to him.
Let's see. Run through. Oh, yeah.
See, now
he
beats him, and now you put Bobby in a bad position on that penetration. But I'm just saying, just little things like that. So when you're watching the game, if you're Charles Barkley, whomever, it looks like, man, this defense really sucks. But there's little adjustments that can be made. And to your point, you know, you get this team thinking a certain way, feeling confident about these openings are going to be there, and then you close them off as the game progresses, and then that's a great approach to the game. Coach Budenholzer was a master.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest part of like NBA defense, with everybody knowing what schemes people run, what rotations they're going to execute. Like the one thing you can do to throw a wrench in people's stuff is the nuance of not showing your hand. So right. letting certain things go. So playing certain things a certain way. I'm not saying Giannis, you know, Giannis reaching obviously puts him out of position severely, trying to get that back poke
yeah.
that he missed. So if had he not reached, had he stayed on the side, he runs interference on the hand. The lob isn't as clear and as easy of a lob. There's a number of things yeah. with that little possession right there. But it would behoove NBA teams like the Bucks to not show their hand early in the game, especially on a defensive scheme standpoint. In football, they do it the same way.
Yeah.
They can show something or they let things go in that first quarter, but then second, third, and fourth, hey, we're moving. We're making the adjustment. Doc, they started icing the pick and rolls. Yeah. They started doing a lot more stuff
right.
in the second half. And I think that's more by design than yeah. it is by these guys just being terrible porous yeah. perimeter defense.
And I think, and you mentioned the blitzing that goes on, bringing Brook up to the level of the screen. He'll switch out and get down and keep yeah, a guy in front of him, a smaller offensive player. So I'm just saying, you know, when you're watching the game, people out there, I mean, just understand the nuances. Understand that, you know, you don't want to tip your hand early. You don't want to look terrible in terms of players constantly beating you to the basket, but there's a methodology to the madness at times right. defensively.
I agree.
And that's just what to keep in mind. So anyway, about that action, Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson, man, we had ourselves a great show today. Bobby Marks came through, gave us some great old-time stories about the old New Jersey Nets practicing at the APA
trucking
company with
that's wild
with Pussy Maldonado and Pauly
wow.
and Pauly, those are like Soprano
the P word.
Soprano characters.
Yeah, I know
Christopher
Pussy
Maldonado
is.
and all those great guys, you know. And but that was a great conversation. And then just talking about the Orlando Magic and their culture. And look, you know, they may be a team that we see at some point this season in the playoffs. And when they get Bancaro and what's the young boy's
Wagner?
Name? Franz Wagner. Mo Wagner. And Franz. I want to pump you up, the Franz Wagner and Mo Wagner combination. I want to pump you up. I want to pump you up. Franz and Mo. Yeah. I mean,
it's serious. It's going to be serious, bro.
Ooh.
The Magic is serious. Like, these programs, I call them programs
yeah.
because it's a real developmental program down there. Like, them guys have a serious culture that's different. I mean, just from yeah. Jump Street, man, they're playing with a sense of urgency.
Yeah,
they're active. They're all over. You could see that this team has a clear, defined identity. They know who they are.
Yep.
They know what they're about. They know what the Orlando Magic calling card is.
Right.
And it's been on the defensive end the entire season. They can't, you know, shooting is what yeah. it is.
So to your point, we'll wind up with this question.
What?
You say the Orlando Magic, they've got a definite personality, got a different identity as a basketball team. The Bucks, how far off are they from establishing their own? Are they close, or is it going to take some more Chris Middleton kind of work in?
I think a couple more games of Chris.
Yeah.
But the identity is already being established. I mean, you see it in these last three or four games. You know, they've lost only, what, to Boston in these kind of nail biters?
Atlanta.
Excuse me. They lost to – yeah, oh, the Atlanta was bad.
Jalen
but yeah, he was –
Nicolet.
Freaking, yeah, he was –
I love that guy.
But that was after coming off the second leg of a back-to-back.
Detroit.
Guys were tired.
Detroit, the NBA
guys
Cup game
spent,
in Detroit.
Guys were spent a little bit emotionally. So, I mean, physically. So, but you see that this is becoming a team that is surefire. They know what time it is. Well, you saw what happened – big possession in that fourth quarter when Dame hit the double step back three.
Yeah.
And this is something I wanted to talk about because it was a big deal to me. It was like I've been saying all year just as far as the Bucks being strategic about who they hunt offensively to get these switches. And a lot of times, sometimes it seems like they're strategic and other times it seems like they're just kind of going with
it. Willy-nilly.
This possession kind of was a turning point, in my opinion, for the Bucks on the offensive end. They hunted the guy they wanted, Wendell Carter, on Dame. Dame hit ISO, clears out, you know, whatever, retreat.
Yeah.
And he didn't really retreat, but he just took his butt. Double step back three. I mean, that, and then they're getting the stops on the defensive end.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
the crunch when it really, really matters. So I think their identity is definitely being
defined. And I thought, Doc, let's give, you know, credit where credit is due.
Absolutely.
The way he is, you know, proportioned out Chris Middleton's minutes to make sure he's available for the last 5 minutes.
But he's in closing time.
That's what I'm saying. The last 5 minutes, he's on the floor. Last five, he's not starting, but
he's
close. 19 minutes and 40 seconds, no buckets, but 8 assists, and got Giannis and everybody else into a nice flow. And then the AJ Green. So he had Chris, Giannis, Dame, and Bobby on the floor. So now you need more defense at that wing position. You don't necessarily need the great shooting of an AJ Green, Derry Bird, in that position. So I'm saying to myself in my mind, okay, it's a good time for Andre Jackson Jr. Doc did me one better. He put in Gary Trent Jr. And I love that substitution. Gary Trent made a
silly foul.
Yeah,
it was questionable because play. It was the ball. I mean, if you look at it closely, the ball hit his elbow.
Yeah,
it was like it really didn't. I didn't get a lot of arm, but he hit him low with the body.
But that was and Doc has been doing this. Doc has been really using his personnel judiciously and strategically, and it's been really, you know, it's the reason why Doc is number 8 or whatever it is on the all time wins list, over 1,000+ wins in NBA championship. He gets knocked a lot, but Doc, man, talking about a culture and nurturing and mothering players.
For sure.
Doc Rivers is pretty darn good at
that stuff,
too.
Just go back to the 2-8 start, man, how everybody handled everything, man. Yeah. Kept the confidence high, kept the morale up, did not falter to me. He was a sign of strength during those dark times, and then they come out of it a better team. But can't get off this podcast without talking about the mayor of Milwaukee, Bobby Portis, and his performance.
Big bucket, Bobby.
When he comes and brings it, and then he's given that effort on the defensive end, dude, getting the 50-50 ball, securing extra rebounds, like, dude, this dude is a player, and he's making it happen.
I love his mom. Mom accompanying us on road trips, on the bus, and just love her whole approach. As you can see, talk about mothering. See how you can see where Bobby gets his toughness from.
Absolutely.
Now he's had an 18 rebound game.
Come on,
He's been 9 for 9, 7 for 7 straight 3-pointers at one
big
point.
Big shot, Bob.
I mean, you know,
come on,
yeah. I mean, Bobby Portis, and that's what I've said all along, that once he starts to get into a rhythm and into a flow,
his groove, got his groove back.
That's when you'll see this real Bucks potential. And now he's got that groove. Gary Trent Jr.'s got that groove, and AJ Green, these guys on the margins, as they say, outside of the big three,
right,
or the core four, if you include Brook Lopez, really starting to play some great basketball. And that's why this team is 11-4 in the last 15 games as of this recording. They're top 10 in offense, 11th in defense. I think they're number 8 in net rating. So moving on up, as they say.
Yes,
so
sir.
It's a good thing. All right, man. Great show today. And we'll be back next week and see how this Bucks fantastic voyage is journeying like a week from now. And until then, you enjoy all things basketball. Here, District, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.